Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back. I'm Carmack, and this is Combat Chronicles. Now, if you've seen the title of this episode, you know what it is. It's the 2023 end of year awards. But if you're listening to this on the main feed, you will be missing out on one category, because if you sign up to the Patreon over at www.patreon.com/combatchronicles, you'll also get to hear the inaugural inductee into the Combat Chronicles Hall of Fame. And that is basically a fighter for me who has retired in the past year, who personifies what this podcast is all about. So if you want to see who that is, and I know what you're thinking, there's a couple of people that could be. Well, if you want to hear that segment, please go and sign up to the Patreon. The rest of the categories, though, are available to you on this feed, and there will still be content coming to this podcast platform you're listening to. But if you want to get more exclusive stuff, of course, go and check out the Patreon. But without further ado, here is the 2023 Combat Chronicles End of Year Awards, the third one in this podcast history, which has now been going for over 2 years. So if you've been there from the beginning, thank you very much. If you joined somewhere in the middle, still appreciate it. And if you're a brand new listener, hope you like what you hear. Hopefully you'll consider making this one of your regular podcasts. So please, enjoy. Finish of the year. Should we go for finish of the year? You think you might have finish of the year towards the finish of the episode, but it's first in my notes. I'm going to change it up. I'm not going to go in chronological order, but this is one which I think can start off the episode with a bang. Now, as I do always say, as a caveat for finish of the year, I'll try and drop some links in the show notes to a couple of Twitter feeds from Boxing Fan and, of course, Kaposa. If you want to see a huge range and host of aesthetically pleasing, brutal finishes, there's so many out there. At a lower level, on a regional scene, even at a decent level, there's loads. But for me, finish of the year has to happen at a certain level, have a weight behind it, some importance as well. Doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, high-level guy or one guy eventually succumbs to attritional body shots and it's not that pleasing. It's got to be good as well. It's got to be sweet. It's that perfect sweet spot between high-level and aesthetic quality. So last year's winner, of course, was the second fight between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman. If you went back 10 years, Manny Pacquiao, Juan Manuel Marquez 4. It's rare when it happens. That's why it's so great. So let's see who the contenders are. Islam Makhachev KO1, Alexander Volkanovski in their second fight. Just loved the way Makhachev set that KO up. Had Volkanovski thinking about the body kicks, and then level change went high. Caught him and then brutally finished him with ground and pounds, leapt on him. Savage. Volk can be hurt, he can be stung, but it's hard to finish him. And even with the late notice replacement, I just think it was so impressive. Yes, Makhachev's bigger, naturally, but Volk is, for me, was the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. But because of those caveats, that's why it's not number one for me. Obviously, Justin Gaethje's head kick KO of Dustin Poirier in their rematch was brutal. And I really rated Gaethje's performance in that fight. Is his finish of the year, of course, but I find that, yeah, there are all kinds of lovely submissions you see on the regionals and at a lower level, but generally I find it, you don't tend to see submissions of high level fighters. That's why Davy Grant's inverted triangle over Rafael Sunsau is so impressive. You know, Sunsau's been past his best. He showed against Victor Henry, he still got it. And, okay, the fence grabs annoy me a bit, but Grant was showing really great varied offence and then leapt on it, sort of opportunistically fell onto the inverted triangle and Sunsau was knocked out. Not a guy that gets tapped out regularly. Crafty veteran, etc. So, really, really impressive. And, of course, Alexa Grasso's crank-slash-choke of Valentina Shevchenko was brutal. It was savage for anyone. I don't know if you get these sweets abroad, but certainly internationally. But in the UK, we would say that Val looked like a squashy sweet. which is was quite the image, and of course was unexpected. Grasso really emerged in that fight, and that's why it's important. Never been a huge fan of a women's MMA above 115, but still, that doesn't happen to Shevchenko. Didn't happen in the rematch, which is why that one still really stands out for me. There's a couple of really brutal, I don't want to say aesthetically pleasing because they fucking make you cringe, knockouts, but of guys that I don't massively rate, but still of a high enough level to mention. Josh Emmett knocking out Bryce Mitchell, and Junto Nakatani knocking out Andrew Maloney. The Nakatani one was after a sustained beating, really, but to knock him out late with one shot, savage. And Emmett caught Mitchell early, but just had him, you know, God, I was about to say something then I should have said. Might have lost me some patrons, but lost me some listeners, but had him convulsing, really, on the mat there, and absolutely brutal. Who else is on this list? Matt Frivola knocking out Drew Dober. Really impressive because the setup was great, running him onto that big wide shot, but also Drew Dober is known for having just an adamantium chin. That's the kind of thing that elevates it. Yeah, Drew Dober's not in the top 5. I think he's still top 15 at the time, don't get me wrong, but that's what elevates it. It was a wonderful, wonderful knockout over a guy who's been proven to be very, very difficult to knock out. And it would elevate it over something like Ismael Bonfim versus Terence McKinney, which was really impressive at the time. But you know, McKinney, he's a bit flaky, you know. So even though that was absolutely brutal knockout, and Bonfim looked so great in that, something like Frivola and Dober would impress me more. Something like Frivola and Dober impresses me more than Emmett and Bryce Mitchell. I know you might go, well, how? Do you know what I mean? Like, that was clearly more brutal, but just levels, you know what I mean? A little bit higher level. Although, obviously, you know, if you wanted to pick Emmett and Mitchell, I certainly would disagree. It was sheer brutality, and come right at the end of the year, so it's fresh in the mind, and seemed to erase a lot of what came before. But for me, it's just not in the top 5. I said that, obviously, I don't really mention the lower level ones, but being a huge admirer of the greatest era of cruiserweight boxing, and just how bizarre it was, Krzysztof Głowacki with the knockout over Patrick Tolkuszewski. Not sure. Don't know who he is. But the, you know, former cruiserweight champion being on his back, being mounted and knocking the guy out of a left hook from his back, I had to mention it. Because obviously I liked Gorowski back in the day. It's who Usyk won his first title from. He gave us that great fight of the year contender against Marco Hook all them years ago. And that KSW show, worth mentioning, because fucking hell, they have it large out there. And that knockout for me, that's the one which is like at a level which is poor, really, generally speaking, especially compared to some of this, but was so mind-blowing. And Głowacki is a notable fighter. And, you know, for a former boxer, this is definitely my bias showing. Not boxing bias, but my bias to that era of cruiserweights, which was one of the most fun and sort of deeply contested and varied stylistic divisions that I've ever seen as a boxing fan. Any opportunity to mention that, of course, I'm going to take it. And having a fair few Polish mates, I'm pretty good with pronunciations generally. But sorry to Patrick Tolkuszewski, maybe? Doesn't matter, you got sparked whilst in mount. So you don't really deserve to have your name pronounced properly. Chingiz Alazov knocking out Superbomb. Highly impressive stuff, again, given the high level of competition. It's not my favourite knockout at ONE Championship this year. The 4-ounce Muay Thai knockout, Jonathan Haggerty versus Nong O, that one blew me away. Yeah, Nong O's past his best. It's really weird with Nong O, actually. It's gone a little bit of a mini run here, but it's really weird with Nong O because for long-time Muay Thai fans, you would consider that a fighter of his age is well past his best, but he was on a run in ONE Championship that suddenly had people crowning him as like the number one pound-for-pound fighter in Muay Thai. And Nong O, who was excellent this day, and has been excellent as of late, there's absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever, but for me, he was never at that top tier of his generation. He was always in there, absolutely. He wasn't the number one guy. And suddenly, he was being seen as the number one guy because casuals sort of get sold this this win streak and sold, you know, ONE Championship's really OTT selling of fighters. and how like he's a great warrior and all that, and you know, and you hear this great history of Nongo, which he did have. You know, he's one of the best fighters in the stadiums. It's very easy to jump on board with him. And for me, it was great to see. But even though I tempered sort of those sort of plaudits that he was getting, he was on a really good run. And Haggerty, for me, I liked Haggerty. He was fun. Didn't see an elite fighter out of him. Moves up in weight and demolishes Nongo. And it's in brutal highlight reel fashion. Incredible combo after already having hurt Nongo. Frames off, gets him against the ropes, drops the right elbow on him, then fires a beautiful salvo of punches and floors him face down. Brutal. Very much could have been the finish of the year for me. 100%. But the winner is...
He's going to limit him to southpaw. Again. The hit is so damn good.
Israel Adesanya finally knocking out Alex Pereira. And there's a lot to it. Yes, it's brutal. Yes, it's at the top level of their division. The history, the storyline, everything building up to now. Of course, the kickboxing bouts. Adesanya probably had done by a decision in the first one. Gets flattened in the second one. Their first MMA bout, their third fight, is, for me, an all-timer of ebb and flow. Yes, of course, there's some bad MMA grappling in it and whatnot, but Pereira coming on strong to finish him in the final championship round. Pereira just looking like he's just an absolute monster. And then in this one, it looks again that Pereira's got the better of Adesanya and is backing him up, pressuring him against the cage, all the things that Adesanya's not very good at dealing with. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, uncorks a right hand, just as he did at the end of their first round in their first MMA bout, stuns him, bangs him again, follows up, hits him behind the ear, flattens him, ground and pound, he's unconscious, and of course, pretends to fall asleep in front of Pereira's children. It's just absolutely savage. I don't really agree with that, but it all adds to the moment. And what adds to the finish even more is that after that fight, Adesanya goes on to lose the championship against the guy that Pereira's already beaten, and Pereira goes on a 2-fight win streak and wins the light heavyweight title, which in turn makes Pereira an even better win for Adesanya. That win appreciates in value. Pereira goes on to get better and wins another title. And then a guy that Pereira smashed to bits inside a round beats Adesanya. More on that later, of course. It might well be like the final hurrah for Adesanya, I'm not sure. The middleweight title's going in a different direction right now. About to have Strickland and Dricus du Plessis at time of recording. Don't know when you're listening to this. I mean, if you're going back and listening to the awards like in 2 years' time, like from 2 years ago, I don't know. Are you looking for fight recommendations or something or what? Live in the now, if that is you. But all that narrative only adds to this finish. And yes, it's one of those finishes, one of those highlight reel knockouts, but it happened at the top level with all that history, all that story. It's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's why finish of the year, Israel Adesanya, KO2, Alex Pereira. Either 2 or 4, depending on how you see it. Will they fight again? Who knows? Will Adesanya move up light heavyweight and have another foray into that division? Obviously, of course, he lost to Jan Blachowicz when he first fought for the title. Will he wait for the winner of Strickland and Dricus du Plessis? I'm not sure, but if this is the end of his title era, you know, his tenure at the very, very top of the division, what a way to go out. You know, overall, love the series because Pereira's got 2 knockouts. Adesanya maybe should have won a decision. And Adesanya's got a knockout. They're sort of inextricably linked. They always will be. There was a chance that if Pereira had finished him in that second round, we would have forgot about the first decision, which people were still holding on to. And of course, Adesanya was doing very well in the second fight with Pereira, the kickboxing bout. And I think Pereira would have completely outstripped Adesanya in a lot of people's eyes. The... sort of, and I'm going off a tangent here, their legacies are so strange now because, of course, Adesanya's got the title defences, the wins over Whittaker and whatnot, and it's 1-1 with Pereira. Pereira has a very sort of short resume at 185, but beat the guy that beat Adesanya. It's, you know, it's a bit strange. And, of course, has a win over him as well. For me, Adesanya, the weird thing is he had his chael in Sean Strickland, the guy that's sort of lesser than him but was able to challenge him. He's actually able to challenge him in his own domain, though. That's the difference between Anderson Silva and Adesanya. Adesanya found a stylistic kryptonite and still managed to find a way to win. Adesanya found a sort of stylistic kryptonite and wasn't able to drag himself out of that. I think maybe that's the difference between them as champions. But he did it against Pereira, against a guy who was put him in bad places and had been previously proven to be a great foil for him. So for me, this isn't the year of Adesanya really sort of shitting the bed against Strickland. More on bed shitters later. Because for me, that was a great performance from Strickland. I'm going to remember Adesanya's year as a tale of two halves, but it's really, really impossible to forget just how incredible this knockout was. So for me, finish of the year, hands down. Haggerty and Nongo was close. Alazov and Superbomb would have been around that level as well, given how high level that was. And we're going to talk about that man later as well. But I'm sure you agree. You can see my reasoning for Adesanya and Pereira. Josh Emmett and Bryce Mitchell just doesn't come close. And that's one a lot of people seem to be floating as knockout of the year. But looking at the submissions, looking at the knockouts, I don't really see how Adesanya and Pereira could be topped. Unless you just say, oh, you know, guys that big suck. Which, funnily enough, these guys actually don't. They're both really, really good. While we're talking about people shitting the bed, of course, let's just run forward to the brand new category. That's enough of that. If you didn't catch that, everybody look at me. I'm making a big poopy. Shit the Bed Award. That's the new award for this year. Fighters just completely shit the bed. Now, you would think that Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou would win because the lineal heavyweight champion looked like complete dog shit and underestimated a guy making his debut. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like Pete Rademacher versus Floyd Patterson on steroids. Rademacher was bigger, and even though he sort of dropped Patterson, Patterson won cleanly. And back those days, amateur boxing was closer to pros. Pete Rademacher was a full-ass grown man. Full grown-ass man. Don't know what the kids say nowadays. But ultimately, Tyson Fury did prevail. Didn't look great, did prevail, and still sets up a massive mega fight, unification, super money fight with Alexander Usyk. Now, Ngannou obviously come out the winner in that fight on a sort of holistic level, so to speak, on a spiritual level, but we'll talk about that later as well. Colby Covington, after talking absolute shite against Leon Edwards, making a right cunt of himself, fought like a complete cunt, did fuck all, and just got dominated for much of the fight. Even in the fifth round with his big effort, nearly got tapped, but you know, Edwards still sort of did the most impressive offense in that round. Offensively impotent, was the lesser wrestler, wasn't really even able to force his pace on a guy that likes to fight at his own pace. Leon wasn't great in that fight in terms of, if you listen to the podcast the other week, my expectations for him. I was hoping he was going to be more like he was in the third Usman fight, more on that later as well. But, you know, overall, it was Covington who did fuck all. He didn't force Leon Edwards to fight out of his shell, so he's right up there for me. Another one, bit unfair maybe because I think he's past his best, but Deontay Wilder versus Joseph Parker. Wilder did his usual thing, but it was sort of no sense of urgency till right at the end to do something different. Parker did quite a basic job, was hanging on for dear life right at the end there, but was able to circumnavigate Wilder as so many others are able to, whilst not walking into something big. So he did the basics well, and Wilder just looked like a sort of past it fighter who can't pull the trigger anymore. But against a fighter who's, we've seen Joseph Parker's level before. That's what was bad about it. Wilder's been inactive, and you know, after the fight said he'd been tripping, literally been tripping, and wasn't really sure if he wanted to fight anymore. So, you know, Wilder, for me, a bit of a weirdo, said some weird shit in the past, but he's quite a lovable guy. I can't really give him this one. Kind of got that Chito Vera, Yoel Romero thing of, you know, he was always going to run out of time eventually, and in this one he did. But did shit the bed, no doubt about it. If you remember the timeline from that fight, and it was only like, you know, 10 days ago or something, people were absolutely like, when is this guy going to do something? Now, Wilder's generally like that, but in this, it was very much a case of, no, it seemed like a normal Wilder fight, and it was to some degree, but he just couldn't pull the trigger anymore. But still a bit unfair for him to win it, as I say. it's also a bit unfair for Stephen Fulton versus Nao Inoue, because Fulton was well outgunned, and I actually said beforehand that he doesn't really have a path to victory, but he didn't try much different. And he froze under the big lights, under the sort of spectacle of being in Japan against a pound for pounder. But it's, yes, he shit the bed, didn't really do much, but also like that was his level. I mean, it's a bit unfair to give it to him, but it's worth mentioning because it was such a poor performance. Anyway, obviously it was excellent, but Fulton was really bad. I think there's probably other people would be more likely to give Fulton that award than I would, because I kind of didn't see a path of victory for Stephen Fulton in this one. And actually, my stylistic breakdown of it in terms of he can't box anyway on the outside, and what he needs to do is pressure him, and there's no way for him to sort of cover that distance without getting twatted, was very much true. But ultimately, I'm just an analyst. Fighters should be proving me wrong all the time, and they do, as I always say on this show. But in this one, I was ultimately proven right. Bit unfair to say shit the bed, maybe, but he was very, very poor. He was very, very average. Totally the opposite, of course, of what we just saw in Inoue's second super bantamweight fight, where you know someone actually tried different things, made adaptations, etc. Fulton didn't do any of that. But the winner for biggest bedshitter is Cyril Garn against John Jones. Just no resistance, hasn't appeared to work on MMA at all. Looked poor striking, looked absolutely terrible grappling, just capitulated so easy. I'm sure people are going to say, but Jones is one of the GOATs. That's fine, but he's looked fucking dreadful in his last couple of fights. Had been inactive, Garn's looked huge in there, and he just offered no resistance whatsoever. It's the ultimate example of a bed-shitting performance. I'm just completely out on him as a fighter going forward. You know, once this sort of Jones, Miocic, Aspinall thing sort of works itself out, the idea that Gunn's going to be one of the top two or three heavyweights is going to prove everyone right that shits on heavyweights. Because this guy is basically not really a mixed martial artist. I mean, he got out-grappled by Francis Ngannou with one knee. And yes, okay, you will say, oh, he's still in a nascent stage in his career. He sort of, you know, did a bit of striking, you know, Muay Thai, kickboxing, whatever. And he's still learning. But for me, he's shown no growth. You can't say, oh, still learning. He's shown no growth. He's going to a fight with John Jones and he's totally, woefully unprepared for absolutely everything. If he'd managed to sort of circumnavigate him for a round and then got finished in the second, it's not really that bad. But he just fell apart immediately, basically. And it was fucking awful. Made John Jones look like the pound for pound number one again. That is a crime in itself. So, sorry, Cyril Garn. You'd stand me on my head with just one finger. But you shit the bed this year. Really fucking bad. You are the winner. Shall we pivot straight from shit performance to great performance? Performance of the year. Who won it last year? Can't remember. Don't really listen to my podcast. Ah, it must have been Volkanovski Holloway in the third fight, right? Yeah, must have been. For this one, we have got... Let's just get Volkanovski out of the way you start off with. Is that Makhachev KO1 Volkanovski again? It's right up there. Canelo... Decision in Jermell Charlo. I didn't put Jermell Charlo in the shit the bed award, even though he offered very little resistance and got completely dominated. There were a couple of sequences where he got some good shots off, but generally he was just sort of shown his level. And it was me that was wrong about that. Again, talk about being proven wrong. More than willing to admit, seeing some downside in Canelo, but I think he was just fighting to the level of his opposition. Whenever Jermell Charlo did sort of open up, put him back in his box, Canelo was just a level above him. Seems sort of, I guess you would say, it was a bit unfair to put Fulton in that category, but not Charlo. But Charlo did try a couple of different things and did obviously go the distance as well. And was moving up two weight classes. That's the difference, yeah? Someone comes into your yard and you let them just fucking take over. That's different. But Canelo has fought all the way up to light heavyweight. Jermell, who's now improving to be a complete cunt. I put a language warning on the... Note to self, put a language warning in the show notes. If you've got kids, of course, you may not care, but I care that you may care. So please, don't have this on in the car. So yeah, Canelo was really, really good and proved me wrong about Charlo, about Jermell Charlo, and about where Canelo's currently at. But yeah, Jermell Charlo ends up being a complete scumbag. never mind. I say never mind. I mean, never mind in terms of I liked him. I'm still going to rate some of his performances, but yeah, never going to root for him, that's for sure. Mirab Dvalishvili, decision in Piotr Jan, a guy who seemed perfectly equipped to deal with so many different styles, and Mirab just completely just run roughshod over him, just dominated him in all phases. Had him thinking about the striking with so many different feints and different setups, and then once he had him thinking about that, was able to just dominate him in the grappling. And really, really impressive performance against a guy. At one point, I thought was one of the best mixed martial artists I've ever seen. And Piotr Jan, yes, still got an incredibly deep skill set, but he's been shown his level a couple of times now. There's a couple of foibles he has. That means he might never be the sum of his parts, but he can still be one of the best fighters you've ever seen. That's fine. Speaking of Piotr Jan, one of his former adversaries, Sean O'Malley, step back dropping Aljamain Sterling. I thought O'Malley just put in a really well-rounded performance in that one. Finish was sweet, and he was fighting well out of his level at that time, and proved himself. Sometimes fighters will show you who they really are. If you throw them in at the deep end, sometimes it's a bad decision. You should move them up incrementally. Sean O'Malley was thrown in the deep end twice, once against Jan, after he hadn't fought really anyone at that level. Chito Vera was near that, of course, but he'd lost that fight. And then again, just thrown in against Aljamain Sterling, one of the great bantamweight champions, and yeah, takes him out like a sniper. Great, great showing. Didn't have that in finish of the year, because if he just deaded him with that one shot, probably would have had it. But yeah, the follow-ups and Aljo sort of trying to get away from him and then getting planted a couple of times wasn't quite sweet enough for me to be in finish of the year. But certainly, and of course, I've never really rated Aljamain Sterling's stand-up. You know, he's awkward. He's athletic and janky. I like that stuff, but you know, he's exactly the kind of guy who's going to be forced to fall over his front foot and run into a backhand. You know, that's who he is. So that's why I didn't quite have that up there as finish of the year. But certainly performance of the year all round. Thought O'Malley was really, really good in that one. Sergio Pettis, decision against Patricio Pitbull. Yes, Pitbull came down in weight, but I thought Pettis just completely dominated him. In a fight where they both sort of have similar stylistic things and slowing down the fight, trying to time the backhand, build it to, not even to a crescendo sometimes, but just slow the fight down their pace and dominate, Sergio Pettis said, "I'm the fucking man." Sean Strickland showing a really good defensive approach against Adesanya, doubling up on the jab, running him in the shots, knocking him down, being consistent throughout, and then fucking walking him down late going, "Let's fucking have it." Really impressive. And again, it's kind of like Strickland kind of got the shot as the only guy in the top sort of five or six that hadn't had a shot. Adesanya's coming off a, you know, knockout finish of the year, finally getting exercising his demons. And it wasn't even a case of, oh, it looks like he took him lightly, because he couldn't fucking bite down his gum shield and do anything. Strickland just had him thinking about too many things. Really virtuoso performance. And again, Strickland, he's not great or anything, but he's awkward. He's got the absolutely fucking amazing Eric Nixick in his corner, who, if I did coach of the year or team of the year, it's going to be those guys. But yeah, Strickland just, he's kind of got that Deontay Wilder thing where he can get beat badly or look shit, but he's sort of so arrogant or confident that he just kind of forgets. And this one, he did not look like the kind of guy who's been banged out before or has looked shit before, timid, poor output, whatever. He's got that weird janky style, and sometimes for a more fundamental base guy like Adesanya, that could be his kryptonite, and it was right up there for me, and that was a really strong contender for performance of the year. Already mentioned Chingiz Alazov and Superman in the finish of the year, that's right up there too, but it was really down to two fights for me, both in boxing. And one of them was Tyson Fury against Francis Ngannou. Francis' performance, and again, it's, of course, it's tied into my own perception of the fight going in, my own biases. I kind of thought that even an off-song Fury, an out-of-shape Fury, will be enough to beat Francis Ngannou, because Francis Ngannou, as much as I liked him in MMA, was a wild man at times. Even when he shored it up against Stipe in their rematch, he's still not going to be as astute in terms of timing, in terms of feel in the ring, is someone like Wilder. Wilder, the biggest puncher maybe in boxing history, right up there. Francis, a massive puncher, but I mean, even when I thought about, like, say, Fury against Dillian White, White's a big banger. He's one note, but he's a big banger. And Fury barely got touched by him, just dominated him. I thought, well, you know, and Fury was great in that fight. So I thought, well, even if Ngannou has a couple of moments, Fury should just be able to up it, up the tempo, start moving round him, pivoting, framing off, you know, clinching up, doing all the stuff Fury does. Give Francis so many looks that it will bamboozle him. And actually, it was not like that at all. And as I said before on this podcast, on Heavy Hands, even Fury being that bad should not have been pushed as he was by a debutant. And it wasn't Francis roughing him up or just powering through him. It was some of the really nice work Francis did, countering the counterpuncher, drawing that backhand counter and then counting the left hook over the top of it. Francis, of course, showing Fury that, right, in your world, you're really fucking good at sort of collapsing the pocket, clinching up, wearing people out, using your size, your innate ability on the inside to really take people out of their game. You can fall back on that. You can't fall back on that against me. I know people said before, like, oh, well, yeah, MMA, you clinch and whatnot. Fury's a really good clincher. Actively fighting for grips, pummeling, all these things. Really good inside fighter. And obviously, he's insanely durable. For Francis Ngannou to drop him, stun him, to pressure Fury. Not pressure fighting, but pressure Fury to the sense that when things go bad for Tyson Fury, he is very good at adapting. He can either change it up boxing. And he did try to do that in this fight. But oftentimes, he will just go, right, fuck it. I'm going to go at you now, much as Lennox Lewis used to. When you're really pissing me off, the best thing to do is to get rid of you. He didn't do that against Francis Ngannou. He felt resistance in a way that did not give him the confidence to change things up and put it on him. And actually late when he was boxing him and then Francis would hit him with Russia punches, Fury would back up and look quite poor, really. The opposite of what he was. So, yes, that's partly due to Fury's lack of prep. That's on him, though. Francis Ngannou, as everyone always says, can only fight who's in front of him. And he fought well out of his level, or showed us his level, and became a massive star because of it in the process. But more on Francis later. He's not the winner for this award.
He'll be looking for it in the remaining 30 seconds or so. And he's going looking for him right now. This could be it. He looks about to go, and the referee stopped it. The fight's all over. Bud Crawford has created history. Unified world welterweight champion. And tonight, he was quite brilliant.
Terence Crawford, TKO 9, Errol Spence. Spence really tried in this fight, unlike Fulton, but Crawford was breathtaking. He was punch perfect. You know, there are certain punch perfect performances that you put on a pedestal. Say, Bernard Hopkins, TKO 12, Felix Trinidad, Salvador Sanchez against Danny Little Red Lopez, I guess Sambu Colamboy, Mike McCallum won. There are others, of course there are. Manny Pacquiao, Miguel Cotto, that sort of thing. Floyd Mayweather in many fights, but you know, Diego Corrales are probably the one that you pick. But yeah, there are these sort of fights you go, wow, fucking hell, like there's two guys who are supposed to be evenly matched. Okay? They're supposed to be evenly matched. That's not what I thought about anyway in Fulton. That's the difference. Now, I did think that after a period of adjustments that Crawford would win. I thought it was quite bold at the time to pick 11th round TKO. I thought he'd have to feel his way into the fight. But much like I was impressed by Usyk not feeling his way into the fight against Anthony Joshua the first time, I thought that in that fight, to make a comparison, Usyk would feel his way into the fight. Then he'd have to throw away some rounds, sort of absorbing the power, and then eventually would come on and win it. And well, I thought he'd lose the decision because he'd throw away those rounds and they'd rob him. Now, that's not the case. He very quickly took the initiative with the jab. Crawford did the same. But in this fight, it was at range, on the inside, counter-punching, finishing, level changes, the lot, defence, everything. Crawford was punch perfect. I never rated Spence as a sort of top 5 pound for pounder, but I thought that he was a really good welterweight. I know people will say, well, post-crash hasn't been the same, etc. He was sort of stunned against Yudenis Ugas and everything. Well, that was my reason for picking Crawford to win the fight, but I didn't think he'd dominate him. Obviously, did a big preview on the fight, and I did pick Crawford to win, but even he outstripped my expectations for him. And in terms of his sort of all-terrain style, switch hitting, etc., the fighter Terence Crawford reminds me most is Marvin Hagler. If I'm comparing you to prime Marvin Hagler, you're kind of a shoo-in to win performance of the year, right? Sure, Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury may have been more incredible, an achievement. I can see why you would pick that one. Don't get me wrong. even in defeat, you know, Francis Ngannou came out of that fight as the winner. It was amazing. And we're going to be mentioning him again later. But for me, Terence Crawford, he only fought once this year. But performance of the year, hands down. Because when I watched it, unlike in the Inoue-Fulton fight, I was mesmerised. I was amazed. Even picking Crawford to win. The fact that he fought that good. And he's a fighter I've had a sort of difficult history with. Never really rated him early on in his career. I thought he was decent. Didn't really see the sort of hype about him being, oh, this guy's going to be one of the best pound-for-pound fighters around. I didn't see it. And then you look back and you go, he's steadily building to being what he is today. In his mid-30s, he is, even if you haven't seen him as the pound-for-pound number one in boxing, I think he's probably the best in boxing. It's him, Usyk, or Inoue, obviously. Canelo would be up there too, but I don't think I've ever been as amazed by Canelo as I was with Crawford against Spence. Or Inoue, really. I don't know what it was about this fight, but he felt like he'd sort of ascended to a higher plane. Now, in terms of the achievement, the whole, he's the first two-weight, four-belt unified champion. Well, you know, it just shows the proliferation of bouts, a bad thing for boxing. It's no greater an achievement outside of circumnavigating or overcoming, rather, the politics of boxing than winning just two world titles. I mean, real world titles. But all the same, it's a fight everyone wanted to see for years. Did it happen too late? Maybe. But for me, Spencer shone enough in previous fights, even post car crash, that he would have been more of a challenge for Crawford. That's why this is so impressive. I didn't think Fulton was going to be that much of a challenge for Inoue. I did think that Spencer was, even though I thought Crawford was going to win, and I thought, yeah, he might stop him late, he might break him down, I didn't see anything like this happening. So even all these months later, when was it, June, July? Not going to bother checking. We'll rely on my aging memory.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
One thing that my aging memory is not going to fail on is remembering the fucking brilliance of this performance. Terence Crawford, performance of the year. Let's go for rounds of the year before we do fight of the year. I think rounds of the year all come from boxing this year. You could pick any number of rounds from Jaime Maguire versus Sergey Derevyanchenko. I thought round 5 between Artur Beterbiev and Anthony Yard was fucking amazing. Yard fighting out of his skin, again, proving me well wrong about what he had in the tank as a fighter. Stunning Beterbiev, following it up, hurting him, chasing around the ring, and then Beterbiev pivoting out, cornering him, and just pounding him with a really varied right hand assault. That fucking round just blew my socks off. And we can't forget it because it was from right back earlier on in the year. But you all know that I think the reason round of the year is kind of short categories. You all know what my round of the year is going to be. If you listen to the Patreon podcast, we already spoke about one of the fights of the year. And it's, of course, round 11, Oshaki Foster versus Eduardo Hernandez.
The most spiteful work has come from Foster. Good. Hernandez is in trouble. Just as we say that, yep. Foster has found the shot. Hernandez in absolute disarray.
Oh. And there's a lot of round left.
Rocky holding on to dear life.
An eternity for Hernandez to survive.
The champion. It looks like Foster's going to finish this one. Rocky is not looking good.
Rocky looking at his corner of Oshaki Foster. With a minute 45. To close the show and here in round 11.
And Rocky needs to pay attention to the champion and stop looking at his corner. He's hurt bad.
Hernandez looks absolutely out of it. He is not focusing at all.
Oh.
Foster all over him.
He cannot go into this exchange.
The champion's digging deep. I said it. The champion got to him to dig deep. And that's what he's doing. And he just hit with a big right hand.
Oh, my goodness.
And
I don't know where Rocky Hernandez found this. Ultimately, they get stopped in the final round. It's why that fight, spoiler alert, is going to be on my list of on the short list for fight of the year. Will it win it? We'll find out in a minute. But that round where... And actually, you need to go back and listen. If you're not a patron, go back and listen to the episode, which was all about this fight. The storylines, the ebb and flow. And yeah, these final couple of rounds, just absolutely amazing. But the 11th round, Hernandez pressuring, gets caught with an uppercut, stunned, backed up. Foster, the champion, all over him with straight punches. Hernandez looks all out of it. He's looking to his corner. He's bloody. He looks in disarray. Bang, throws the right hand down the pipe. Doesn't quite land. Bang, squares up, throws one again. And then Foster is back against the ropes. Hernandez is all over him. He's peppering him with shots. He's throwing big, wide shots. His chin's out. He's leaning over his front leg. He's throwing massive, wide blows. Foster's trying to hit him down the middle with counters, with backhands. And Hernandez is all over him. It's wild. It's sloppy. It's dramatic. But it's... Yes, the round itself, you might look at it and go, this is round of the year. Well, it's clearly really good, but it's everything that builds up to it that makes round 11, Oshaki Foster, who did win by 12th round TKO against Eduardo Rocky Hernandez, the round of the year, hands down. Maybe there's some MMA rounds that should have got a shout. Let me know in the comments on Patreon or hit me up on Twitter at CombatCR. Do you think I was a bit unfair to sort of just go boxing only for round of the year? But the fights I mentioned, they were just fucking insane. And yeah, Foster Hernandez wins it for me. Hands down, I just knew it would from the moment I watched it. But Beterbiev Yard, let's not forget that. It was right back in January, round 5 of that one. There was a couple of good rounds out, but round 5 of that one was amazing. And of course, Jamie Munguia versus Sergey Derevyanchenko. You could have picked fucking any number of rounds from that as a contender. That was just carnage throughout. Great fight. Great fights. Fight of the year. Only a couple of categories left. Fight of the year. Oshaki Foster versus Eduardo Hernandez was up there. Great fight. Didn't have enough frills and spills throughout, but right up there for me, just absolutely brilliant. A fight that was fought at a mental pace throughout was, of course, Alexandre Pantoja winning the flyweight bout against Brandon Moreno. Just wonderful, gory, fucking balls to the wall for much of those five rounds. And, you know, ends with a great feel-good story. So that's right up there for me in terms of MMA bouts. Other MMA bout for me was the wonderful two-way technical between Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski in their first fight. And for me, the ebb and flow of that, you know, of Volk trying to time his entries, Makhachev emerging as a much more impressive counter-striker than many of us thought, running Volkanovski on the backhand, knocking him back onto his heels. But of course, building, you saw that building to crescendo, building to Volkanovski on top of Makhachev, hanging on for dear life, tired after exerting so much effort to try and tame Volkanovski throughout the fight. And Volk, one of the best ground and pound specialists, well, not specialists, but in terms of that being one of the main facets of his game. For me, the comparison between for Volk with ground and pound, complementing other elements of his game, is Fedor Emelianenko. He's one of the just most brutal ground and pound guys we've ever seen. Raining down shots, trying to get the finish. Ultimately, it wasn't enough. Islam Makhachev prevailing by decision. But my fucking word, that fight was just... It was everything. It was, we now know, maybe the 1 and 2 pound for pound in the sport going at it. When do we ever get that? And just easily could have won. Easily could have won. In fact, as I talk about it, I wonder how it didn't win. Because there was just so many great fights. I mentioned Munguia versus Derevyanchenko. I just feel like with that fight, like, again, it's like you really have to do something special to win Fight of the Year. And I just kind of feel like that fight was so made for fucking HBO 10, 15 years ago. If you transport those guys back and you have Lampley, Merchant and Foreman or whatever, whichever sort of HBO broadcast team you want, you know, Jim Lampley, Roy Jones maybe. You know, and with Merchant, who apparently is gravely ill, by the way, but not surprising, in his fucking 90s, but what a fucking geezer Larry Merchant was. If you had those guys comment over that, it was one of those Boxing After Dark or something, I think it actually would have elevated the fight. But, you know, Munguia Derevyanchenko was just balls to the wall action for much of its 12 rounds, loads of frills and spills, and with an amazing 12th round to close it out. Could easily have won. Joe Cordina versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. I think that was a really good fight. Interesting sort of... Cordina's a sort of actually think Cordina's impressed me more and more the more I see him fight, actually, because I never really was sold on him coming out of the amateurs and in his early pro career. But sit down, his shots well now. He can fight on the inside well. I still think he sort of gets in. He's not as slick as he thinks. That was always my criticism about him. But in this fight against Rakhimov, early Cordina's matching him on the inside, drops him with a chopping left hook. But then Rakhimov comes on and just fucking goes mad at him. It's kind of slicker, more multifaceted fighter against a pressure fighting southpaw sort of bludgeoning type of fighter. And then Cordina sort of becomes a punch picker late, timing him with right hands and landing really sharp counter punches. But Rakhimov's there for the whole fight. That was really good. And it's one of them fights where over 12 rounds, and I talk about Mungai and Derevyanchenko in much the same way. I don't really like attrition fights if there's not any drama to it. It's why I wasn't as high on, say, Fulton and Figueroa from the year before last. You know, that was seen by some as one of the best fights of the year. For me, there was a whole lot of activity in that fight, but not really any drama. And for this, there was drama. And with Mungai and Derevyanchenko, which I do prefer actually as a fight, there was drama. I probably should have stayed with boxing because it is boxing again that wins fight of the year, but the first awards was won by a kickboxing bout, and for me the best kickboxing bout of the year was the third fight, the rubber match between Akihiro Kaneko and Masashi Kimura, two of K1's best, and we got an extension round and you know Kaneko eventually pulled away, but the exchanges beforehand and the adaptations both guys made just made for a wonderful fight, and really loved that one. And yeah, I mean, if you've never seen these guys before, well worth a watch. Kimura's got one of the most sort of educated left hands in all of combat sports right now. And Kaneko looks like a fucking bodybuilder, but at like, what, 122 pounds? And he's kind of like a power boxing type, you know, big fucking, big jab, big right hand, big hook off the jab, powerful sort of low kicks. And I don't think he comes from a karate background. So he's got this kind of, almost like a boxer puncher sort of style, but for me this was the main fight where he did look more like a boxer puncher type in kickboxing, because we saw variance in his game, really smart work with the jab, and yeah, pulled away late. And I think a lot of people thought that Kimura, based on the other fights, was going to finally prove himself the better guy, and Kaneko just looked like a fucking powerhouse in there. And yeah, just a wonderful fight to watch, and we'll know surely be on YouTube now, because K1 chucks all their stuff on YouTube. So yeah, brilliant fight, loved it. But there's something about this oddity in boxing this year which just lends itself to winning, and it's Rafael Espinoza versus Rabisi Ramirez. Rabisi Ramirez, one of the great modern amateurs. His bizarre career, losing his debut, you know, looking to be one of those washout Cubans that finally reaches the shores of capitalist America and just flakes out, gets back on the horse, fucking finally starts to look like an elite fighter again, and then comes up against his undefeated Mexican. There's barely any footage on him. He's crushing cans, essentially, is Espinoza, but just so happens to be that he's about 6'1" at featherweight, and he's fighting out of his skin for the first 4 or 5 rounds. And then Rabisi Ramirez just clatters into him, and then for the next couple of rounds Rabisi Ramirez is stunning him. I say he drops him with a right hook, taking advantage of a mistake, and then he's battering Espinoza for much of the next following rounds. And every time he sort of seems to land clean, Espinoza's legs buckle, they stiffen up, he falls backwards, he's getting clobbered, he's getting run into shots, he's overextending, and then you start to see the class of the Cuban. You think, this is a fucking good fight. And inexplicably, Espinoza gets a second wind. And then, unbelievably, in the final round, puts it all together and does this.
Headshot. Look at Espinoza.
Espinoza now turning it on more and more.
Ramirez has to do something. He has to do something.
Espinoza sending him back against the ropes. Ramirez with Espinoza scores the knockdown. This could be a massive upset. Gold medalist against the little known, rugged, Mexican, hopeful. He is in trouble right to the final bell.
This one's all about story. Much as Oshaki Foster and Eduardo Hernandez was, this one's all about story. It's the vaunted great Cuban who has escaped from poverty, had a terrible start to his pro career, started to put it all together, wins a title against a guy who no one really knows about, has a pretty looking record on paper, but then just gets in the ring and you look at this guy and you go, oh, he's just going to be like a big freak. And he's not. He actually boxes well with Ramirez early and is overwhelming him. Then, of course, the Cuban turns it up, finds the class, makes the reads, and then shows that sort of, oh, he is a level above. And then we get a torrid couple of rounds of Espinoza desperately trying to fight back, getting clipped, getting stung. And then he finds his feet again. He finds his legs again. And then he doesn't stop throwing punches. He walks Ramirez down, hurts him in the 12th, forcing him to take a knee, keeps throwing and throwing and throwing and will not let this opportunity go. Inexplicably going from sort of hardly known gangly Mexican to beating one of the sort of best talents in boxing, really. I do think Ramirez has still got so much talent. Spoke about Piotr Jan earlier, you know, a fighter who's never going to be the sum of his parts. I think that's clear to see with Robeso Ramirez. We see now there's issues there. There's a number of issues. It wasn't just a case of taking his eye off the ball. There's a number of issues there. And for some of this fight, his approach was poor. He didn't really have the adaptations available to him. He found Espinoza a very tough stylistic challenge. The fact that he found some solutions, and then he was a bit sloppy again, but then he settled down and found those solutions again, and then late on seemed to find more solutions in terms of, right, you don't need to try and walk this guy down, you can try and box with him, and Espinoza will be able to match him again. It's just this, the ebb and flow of this and the drama, it's everything. I did a podcast on this one as well, where I said, is it a fight of the year? And I stand by it. I do believe that Robeso Ramirez, let's do it in order of the winners, shall we? Rafael Espinoza, decision 12 over Robeso Ramirez, is the fight of the year. Espinoza is just a fucking weirdo. There's a couple of weirdos at featherweight. I'd love to see him fight Ray Vargas now. I think Ray Vargas is going to fight Figueroa. So any of them sort of guys eventually are going to prove to be maybe Naoya Inoue's biggest challenge, or at least his weirdest challenge. We need to throw weird fighters at Inoue now. We've seen him fight a number of different guys, smaller guys, faster guys, not faster than him, but faster in the division, powerful guys, veterans, counterpunches, pressure fighters. We've seen him fight against all, and you know, sort of defence-minded, sort of slick types, awkward types. We've seen him fight all these sort of guys. Let's throw him in against some big fucking weirdos. Espinoza's a big fucking weirdo, and he is nails. His resolve was something else, something to behold, really. And yeah, this story that this fight told, it was movie-like. And I really do think that it is better than Foster and Hernandez. For me, the only one that could have come close, really, and it does come close, but the one which very nearly won for me was Volkanovski and Makhachev, the first fight. I still don't think that MMA has won Fight of the Year, which is weird because it's always up there for me. First year was Takaru and Leona Pettis. But looking back, I think it should have been Wilder Fury 3. And last year's fight, of course, was Lee Wood versus Michael Condon, which is one of the best fights I've ever seen. So maybe MMA will win next year. It looks like we're going to get some big fights. So fingers crossed, maybe UFC 300 will be the one to give us the fucking fight that finally wins Fight of the Year for MMA. Which is weird because MMA is a combat sport I watch most nowadays. It's probably my favourite combat sport, as much as I love boxing and it's got a bigger history with it. Boxing just, you know, it doesn't always give us the fights we want, but it tends to give us some fucking incredible fights. Don't know what it is, but it's something about a big boxing match. And this one just came out of nowhere. And I looked at Espinoza, the very small snippets of footage you could find, and you thought, yeah, he's puffed up and doesn't really have much in the way of skill. And it's kind of that Sean O'Malley thing. Suddenly you put him in Robeso Ramirez, and this gangly, lanky freak looks fucking better than he ever has done. And is raised his game to the level of opposition. It was up to the Cuban to make the adjustments. He did, and Espinoza adjusted to the adjustment. And that's why it's fight of the year for me. I can see there's other contenders, definitely. But it's won it for me. And I hope if you haven't seen this fight, maybe you're listening on the non-Patreon feed and you, on the regular feed, and you didn't hear the podcast I did on that. Even if you don't want to sign up to the Patreon, please go and seek out Rafael Espinoza beating Robeso Ramirez. Just amazing stuff. Before we get to Fighter of the Year, we're going to go for Moment of the Year, which can be in the ring, in the cage, outside, big storylines, kind of, you know, storyline of the year, I guess, the things that really got us talking. And I think I did this last year, but I don't remember who won it. Fuck knows. Was it fail or actually winning a fight? Well, moment of the year this year for me can only be one, but let's run through some of the ones that really got us talking. Robbie Lawler winning by KO against Nico Price, and the wonderful retirement package that the UFC put on for him was just maybe the most emotional moment of the year for me, and just phenomenal. Endeavor buying out WWE to form a super company with UFC called TKO. Just, it's just huge for combat sports, really, and the kind of crossovers they may do. And it's just, it's monumental for the WWE to finally be bought out. And you might think, oh, how is it combat sports? But this is so much crossover. It is. The UFC have had WWE fighters fight and win titles, and WWE had former UFC fighters fight there, mixed martial arts, etc. This is so much crossover that UFC's parent company buying WWE is a massive, massive fucking story. It's maybe why PFL buying out Bellator did not, you know, sort of amaze me as much as it should have done. But kind of with Dana White, who cares if two companies that no one gives a fuck about sort of, you know, get merged. As a consumer, hopefully it makes some really interesting fights. But yeah, you know, it was a big storyline, but I wasn't like, whoa, because it'd been rumoured for ages. I think we all knew it was going to happen. Sean Strickland and Dricus du Plessis brawl in the crowd at UFC 296. Well, it's got us well excited for that fight, hasn't it? Oh, fuck, I just realised. Performance of the year earlier. Thank God I mentioned DDP. His fucking performance over Robert Whittaker was great. Joran Whittaker's lead to counter it, hurt him, stun him, finish him. Fucking hell. That should have been in there. I'm glad that I mentioned this, because then that allowed me to remember that. I was so amazed by that. But yeah, you know, that's fucking... For a fight between... If you told me 18 months ago that the UFC middleweight title would be contended between Sean Strickland and Dricus du Plessis and I would care about it... Well, take the care about it out of the equation first. If you told me that was going to be the title fight, I'd assume that maybe Pereira and Adesanya had carpooled one day and been killed in an accident. But... And maybe Khamzat Chimaev was all like injured and bloated again, like he appears to be at the moment. I would have said, there's no fucking way them boys are going to fight for the belt. That I'd care about it? That they're both coming off career best performances and actually look like they could be two of the best options at 185? And then they're going to have a fucking brawl in the crowd? Fucking bring it on. I think, though, two of the biggest moments of the year do involve the two best heavyweights in boxing. And one of them is the Daniel Dubois quote-unquote low blow against Oleksandr Usyk, which completely fucking blew up social media. For those that are unaware, Daniel Dubois hit Usyk with a body shot slash low blow. Still disputed by pretty much everyone. It's 50-50. Referee called a low blow. Usyk took all the time out he needed. Boxed his way back in the fight and stopped Dubois. And people felt that Dubois was robbed. Actually, it was a legal shot. And he stopped Usyk with a body shot. And there's, of course, a train of thought from fighters and pundits alike that if they said to Usyk, no low blow, that's a knockdown, he would have got up sooner. Much as he did in the World Series of Boxing against Medvedev, when he was hit with what he felt aggrieved by as a low blow. Again, a kind of thing where it was on that belt line, kind of started low, rid up. Was it just the bottom of the glove clipping the shorts that made it look like a low blow? We'll never know. But he got up, oh, took a deep breath, sucked up, cracked on. With this one, did he make a meal out of it, or was he genuinely really badly hurt? We'll never know. But he got back up, boxed his way back in the fight, pulled it on Dubois and stopped him. But my God, the reactions to that as it was happening. As Usyk would win later rounds and people go, he fucking cheated. You know, Dubois being cheated. This is corrupt, etc., etc. And then Frank Warren afterwards, we're going to put a claim in. And Usyk saying, you know, it was actually quite an easy fight. Generally, apart from that, it was quite an easy fight. Dubois had his moments. Fought boxed pretty fucking well, considering how out of his depth he was. But that was one of the biggest moments of the year. The phantom or real, depending on which side of the fence you're on, low blow, Daniel Dubois against Oleksandr Usyk. But come on, there was only ever going to be one winner for moment of the year. And of course, it involves the other so-called best heavyweight in the world, Francis Ngannou, dropping Tyson Fury.
Down goes Fury! And Ngannou lands the shot. And the heavyweight champion has to pick himself off the canvas.
Unbelievable left hook came from Ngannou. Fury's okay. He's been there many times before, but that is an incredible punch from Francis Ngannou. Incredible. How much damage has it done? Are we on the verge of a sensation here in Riyadh?
We were witnessing a sensation. Even though Fury came out with a win, that moment and Francis's whole performance was just fantastic. But that moment for Ngannou to prove that he belonged, to drop Tyson Fury with a counterpunch as well. He didn't fucking wing into him, like Rosenstrike or something. He let Fury lead. He read the combinations that Fury was throwing, straight shots, 1-2, 1-2, and then countered him over the backhand with the left hook and dropped him. And actually, I think, you know, Fury jumped back up and looked fine. It was totally different to say that when Wilder stunned him, when Wilder fucking buried him, basically, in any of their fights. So he looked more affected by Wilder in their third fight than against Ngannou. It rattled him mentally. I think he felt, oh, I'm looking like a fucking idiot here, and realised he was in more of a fight than he'd anticipated, that he'd prepared for. And that completely changed the dynamic of the fight. Fury hadn't looked great before then, but if it's sort of just been a kind of pitter-patter fight, people would have gone, yeah, it was an exhibition, and it was just an exhibition. This made it a real fight, and made everything that happened after it so much more meaningful. And Ngannou just proved himself. But I don't want to talk too much about it, because next award is going to be Fighter of the Year, and Francis Ngannou, of course, will be mentioned in that category. The nominees for Fighter of the Year. The last category, if you're listening on the regular feed, please sign up to the Patreon if you want to hear one extra one. The nominees are Patchy Mix, who won the Bellator Bantamweight Grand Prix in fantastic fashion and then beat Sergio Pettis, who, as earlier on in this podcast, as I said, had a great performance against Patricio Pitbull. Basically, at that point, I would say Sergio Pettis was the best pound-for-pound fighter in Bellator. Patchy Mix, you know, even if you look at the Horiguchi fight, which he probably didn't deserve to win, he's gone from strength to strength. He scored knockouts this year, submissions. He just looks like a fucking monster at bantamweight. And I know people will go, this kind of. Sign up to the Patreon, I can't even talk. There's this kind of push and pull between people that want to go, see, the best fighters could be in Bellator, they could be anyone, and this kind of, fuck Bellator, okay? They're not going to come into the UFC and be the champion. Patchy Mix looks like he could be. He certainly looks like he could be a great addition to what is already a stacked bantamweight division. But his achievements within Bellator, with a very top quality, so I just can't speak. It just had a good, diverse bunch of fighters in this bantamweight tournament. And Patchy Mix prevailing and then beating Sergio Pettis to quote-unquote unify the two bouts. It's really, really impressive. And I was just amazed by how well he did, especially after the Horiguchi fight, which of course speaks volumes about how excellent Horiguchi is. And now he's back at flyweight as well, thank the Lord. But he fought out of his weight for a while. That's as much about Horiguchi's class as it is about Patchy Mix's shortcomings, but whatever shortcomings he had, we didn't see any this year. He was phenomenal. Even though he did lose against Kleber Koike Herbst, that was a no contest. He was submitted, but Chihiro Suzuki had a great win against Patricio Pitbull. Even though it was late notice, don't get me wrong, and you know, Pitbull was basically just filling in on a week's notice. He should not have won that fight as easily as he did. Fucking destroyed him inside around. And then against Karimov in Azerbaijan, won by upkick, and after being sort of grounded and looking like he was going to be worked over by the better grappler, fucking caught him, hurt him, and then finished him off. So I thought Suzuki had a really good year all in all. Essentially, he's 2-0-1 no contest, but really he did lose a fight against a fighter I don't love, but I still wanted to mention him because, you know, those two wins were really impressive. And even though Pitbull came in late notice and was coming off the Sergio Pettis loss, he fucking wiped him out. And it was, yeah, I just thought overall he had a good year. Speaking of Japanese fighters having a great year, Toki Tamaru winning the Rise Grand Prix, just looked absolutely fantastic. 5-0 in the year, including wins over Kazuki Osaki, who was seen as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in all the kickboxing, basically. And against Kumandoi, who was coming off an amazing fucking win against Shiro. I thought he looked fantastic in that. Oh, by the way, fucking fight of the year, I forgot to mention. absolutely loved Shiro versus Dieselek at Rise El Dorado back in March. That was a great one. But yeah, I thought Turkey Tomorrow looked fantastic against a variety of different styles, 5-0 in the year, and Kumen Doi coming off that quality win over Shiro. The fact that he tamed him as he did, and it'd be two excellent fighters, and kind of as well as he was touted, but I don't think anyone thought he was going to win the tournament. He really has emerged as one of the best fighters in all of J-Kick. So fair play to him. He was right up there for me when I made my assessments for Fighter of the Year, as was Islam Makhachev, who only fought twice this year, but they're both against the pound for pound number one. Erase the memory of the poor end of this first fight against Volkanovski. Yes, of course, it was late notice, but really showed that he was the man at lightweight. And, you know, for me, showed how good he was for much of that fight against Volkanovski in the first fight. And didn't leave any room for error in this one, and just fucking annihilated him in their rematch, and showed him, you know, if you're going to take a fight with me on short notice, mate, I'm the fucking man round here. Between now, Inoue and Bud Crawford, both fighters I mentioned before, do I think Fulton and Topales add up to just Spence? Maybe. Inoue moving up and unifying the, you know, all four bouts against really, neither fighter was elite in my opinion, but, you know, different things to sort of throw at him, but certainly thought that Topales did a better job of it. But as I said in my analysis of that fight, as interesting a fight as that was, I still think even though he beat Akhmadaliyev, Akhmadaliyev in any way would be a more interesting one, even if in any way would win. But do they add up to one Errol Spence win? I don't think they do. I think I still have Bud Crawford slightly out ahead, but neither for me are a Fighter of the Year. Maybe this will be the only time someone wins Fighter of the Year with only fighting once and that one fight being a loss. But for me, for everything it meant, for the storyline, for, and I know people say, oh, fight fans like narratives rather than fights, but this is how you really can't separate the narrative from this fight. The narrative is why this fight is so meaningful. It's unprecedented. It's everything, really. The best heavyweight in boxing taking on the best heavyweight in MMA. The lineal, all those lineages that Francis Ngannou took with him when he left the UFC and bet on himself, when Dana White tried to slander him and say that he just didn't want to fight the best anymore. And when he took on Tyson Fury, a guy that had been to the well many times against big punches, and we've seen him prevail, to think that he could do something different and make himself overnight one of the biggest stars in all of combat sports. I was already going to give Francis Ngannou Fighter of the Year, but the night before I recorded this episode, and I already knew it was happening, but it had, you know, I think I said on Heavy Hands, he's Fighter of the Year from basically like the day after the fight. I haven't really wavered on that. But especially when you consider that now, in the cold light of day, when all the dust has settled, Francis Ngannou is still being talked about to the extent that he has just fought his way. He has gambled and fought his way into a fucking massive money-spinning fight of Anthony Joshua. He made the best heavyweight in the world look like... Well, actually, I'll tell you what, I said it before. If you put me in a room, expose me to MMA and boxing for all of my life, but never expose me to anyone associated with Francis Ngannou or Tyson Fury, and then showed me their fight and asked me which one's the mixed martial artist boxing for the first time, I would have said Tyson Fury. I would not have said Francis Ngannou. That's how impressive that performance was. But it's for what he did for all of MMA, really. He showed them, you do not have to be a slave to the UFC contract. There are options out there. Okay, the options for someone who isn't a hulking 6'5", you know, Adonis with massive punching power are going to be limited. Don't get me wrong. But if you gamble on yourself, you can achieve it. And not only that, but to put in an excellent performance. If he just sort of got the payday and got steamrolled, you know, probably still would have been, he probably wouldn't have been up there in Fighter of the Year or anything, but moment of the year, maybe the fight even happening. But the fact that Francis done this after well over a year of inactivity, after coming off surgery, major injuries, after having his name dragged through the dirt, after having John Jones win his title, and then suddenly he's been erased from history from the company that he left. They basically put a GOAT contender in his place and went, see, this is who the real heavyweight champion would have been if they fought, and he's recognisable enough that now you'll just say, yeah, Francis don't want to fight him. And Francis has passed his best due to the surgeries, and he don't want to fight Jones because it's a bad stylistic matchup for him. And then to go into boxing and look better than he's ever looked against probably the most capable guy he's ever faced, okay? As I said, the context is that Fury clearly didn't take it seriously. But Francis had to do all those things. Francis had to have that game. He had to be able to clinch with him. He had to be able to counter him. He had to be able to jab with him at times. He had to be able to pressure Fury and back him up with a sort of rapid-fire combo of punches. He had to do all those things. He had to be tough enough to take his shots. Fury's not a, you know, a light puncher. Francis Ngannou was Fighter of the Year, even though he only fought once in 2023 and lost. Because when you look at all the fighters in the year, he's the biggest winner. And it looks like in 2024, he's going to be as well. Now, if you're hearing me, this means you're on the main podcast feed and your listenership is still very much appreciated. But if you're on the Patreon feed, again, that link is www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. You'd have a whole nother, I think, about 12 minutes of content on this episode. So you would be able to hear, of course, that last segment, which is the inaugural inductee into the Combat Chronicles Hall of Fame. But if not, I hope you really enjoyed this one. Hit me up over on Twitter at @combatcr. Let me know who you agreed with, which winners you agreed with, which of the shortlists you agreed with. Let me know who you think was a poor pick that you generally thought shouldn't have won. Let me know, is there anyone that you think that I actually missed out on? Because at the end of the day, we're all trying to share knowledge. Is it something that I'd already talked about that I forgot about? Is it something that I just never mentioned all year and you think I should be getting into? What are we not here for, if not for sharing knowledge and trying to raise each other up? Hopefully you found some new favourites from this episode. Maybe I've rejigged your memory to go and check some classics that you've forgotten about from earlier on in the year. If not, hopefully you'll enjoy this one and stay on board for the rest of the year and beyond, because there's going to be loads of content coming from this channel and, of course, over on the Patreon where you get the majority of it, including those audio documentaries, feature-length audio documentaries, as well as lots of other weird and wonderful content, at least in my opinion, and from the feedback I get from the patrons and listenership. So thanks, guys. Hope 2024 was a banger. 2023 certainly was. Looks like 2024, sorry, if I can speak, will bring us some fucking excellent fights as well. Already got some of the fucking maddest heavyweight fights over the next couple months. We've got Usyk and Fury, and of course we've got the recently announced, which I mentioned in the podcast, Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. If you're not excited about that, let alone UFC 300, let alone we've got Strickland and Duplessis coming later this month. There's so much going on in the world of combat sports already to start 2024. You just know that next year's awards are going to be fucking stacked, don't you? So let's all talk about them together, whether it's you listening to me on this podcast or offering your feedback over on Twitter at @combatcr. Hope to hear from you. Hope you enjoy this episode and hope that 2024 treats you well.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.